Man. It's good to be here this morning. It's good to have a few faces back with us that have been a little under the weather. So we've got Hunter and Jaden have some friends. You've heard Hunter talk about there's this one guy that has always been pretty consistent to check on him. This is that one guy. So they live in Japan. They don't really look Japanese. That's probably why he likes coming to church here, is because everybody here is short, except for a few kilos, right? But he plays basketball overseas in Japan. They're a few months getting in to be in the States and decided to come and grace us with their presence, and we appreciate their time here. This morning, we're going to be in a good text. So we're going to be in Matthew chapter 7. This is the fun slash not so fun part of the Sermon on the Mount. And what do I mean by that? You guys have heard me over the years talk about cross-stitch scripture. Everybody knows what that is now, right? It's the verse you find above the toilet at grandma's house that she cross-stitched, right? And so oftentimes in our lives, we've seen verses like that. As for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. That's a pretty popular one. The text this morning is going to be another one of those popular ones that oftentimes you see this text cross-stitched, framed, you know, some beautiful picture behind it, and it's calligraphy written, and it hangs in our homes. And so oftentimes, because of that, we take texts like this and we kind of shift it and we put it in really the wrong perspective because there's so much there that's missing. And so, this morning, if you would, turn to Matthew chapter 7, starting in verse 7. We're going to read this text this morning, and then we're going to talk about it. But ask, and it will be given to you. Seek, and you will find. Knock, and it will be opened to you. That's the verse that you see so oftentimes hanging on a wall. Ask, and it will be given to you. Seek, and you will find. Knock, and it will be opened to you. For everyone who asks, receive, and everyone who seeks, finds. To the one who knocks, it will be opened. Or which one of you, if his son asks him for bread, will give him a stone? Or if he asks for a fish, will give him a serpent? If you then, who are evil, know how to give good gifts to your children, how much more will your Father who is in heaven give good things to those who ask him? And so we've seen this text, we've read this text. In terms of the Sermon on the Mount, this is kind of where we land. We like this spot. We're not so much a big fan of the other places. And when I say that, I'm speaking, again, you guys know me well enough to know I'm speaking to myself first. And so oftentimes we read this text, this ask idea, this seek idea, this knock, and it sounds almost too good to be true, doesn't it? It's like, well, I've asked before. I've sought before. I've knocked, and I don't know that he answers. I'm not sure that he's behind door number three. And so we get in this mindset sometimes that because this sounds and seems so outlandish, we have a tendency just to kind of discount it. And what I told y'all from the very beginning as we started studying the Sermon on the Mount is that you're going to ask yourself as we go through this text, you're going to ask yourself, did he really say that? Is he really expecting me to live that way? And so right now, what I want you to do is not disconnect this text in Matthew 7, 7 through 11. Don't disconnect this text from what we've been studying for several months because it's connected. See, we disconnect verses sometimes. We pull them away and we say, we kind of idolize them. We're like, well, I'm asking, I'm seeking, and I'm knocking, and I'm not finding. Nobody's answering. And when I seek, I'm not getting. And so we disconnect it. But what Jesus is doing, remember, he's giving us this message also as he's sitting on the side of a mountain with his 12. And as this has been labeled over history, the greatest sermon ever preached. And in this greatest sermon ever preached, this section's there. But I want you to not lose sight of what we've been talking about, because I think there's value in understanding this text in relationship to all the other stuff we've been studying. Because let me ask you, this is what we've done over the last several months. Let me scroll back a little bit. We've talked about anger. Anybody have trouble with anger? Let's do ourselves a favor today. Not raise your hands, just because I don't want everybody's arms getting tired as I go through this list. We've talked about anger. Jesus has talked about it. He has addressed anger in the Sermon on the Mount. How about lust? Anybody struggle with lust? He's talked about lust. He's talked about divorce. He's talked about making oaths. He's talked about retaliating. He's talked about loving our enemies, giving to the needy, fasting, not being anxious. We spent the last several weeks on judging others. I want you to hear what Jesus has been talking about. And I want you to understand that anybody get to the end of that section, the body of the Sermon on the Mount, anybody get to the end of that section and go, I'm in trouble. Because Jesus is calling us to a different style of life. He's calling us to a higher standard. And I've told everyone here over the last several months that I used to just avoid the Sermon on the Mount because I didn't think it was possible. And what I'm learning as I've broken it down and as I've kind of spent some time digging into it is that it probably is impossible if I'm going to do it. But it's highly possible if I'm going to tie into who Jesus is. And so here he's saying, listen, we've dealt with some hard subjects, some hard topics, some topics that back then were relevant and topics today that are relevant. And when we get to kind of the end of this section, he's saying, listen, you need help. Anybody else need help? So ask. Ask. You need help. Seek. You need help. Knock. There's this progression of effort. I heard it put this way. If you want something from your parents, you're going to ask, right? You're going to ask. But if they're not in the room, you got to find them. So you're going to have to, effort's going to have to win over in your existence because they're just not there. It's not easy, so you're going to have to go find them. You're going to have to go seek them. But then when you finally find them and they're in their bedroom and the door's closed, what are you going to do? Knock. It's this progression of effort. Listen, we're going to ask, but we need to not just be content with asking. And if we're standing in our dark place and asking, we're not hearing anything, what are you doing about it? Are you just going to say, well, I'm just going to quit asking? Nobody's listening to me. Or maybe we should progress and go, maybe I need to seek. What am I seeking? I'm seeking Him. And I'm going to pursue Him. Because see, in this is almost a prayer. And in this prayer, if we're going to ask and if we're going to seek, we are in pursuit of who God is. Jesus is calling His disciples to live like He does. Jesus is in pursuit of the Father. When Jesus does something, He asks, He seeks, He knocks. He spends intentional time with God because He understands that it's God's intention. God's intention is good things for His children. And it goes into the further section. It says, who of you has a son who might, I might have given Hunter a rock if he asked for bread, right? If he was hungry and he walked into the house when he was a teenager, guess what his mama did? Fed him. Now, I will confess, he wanted Taco Bell, right? She might be giving him something that's way better for him. But don't forget that it was hunger that brought the question to the table. And then it was us as parents who tried to take that information and provide the best for him. Even though it wasn't necessarily what he wanted, it's what he needed. And who's going to offer their son a stone if they ask for bread? He goes through this dialogue. Is anybody in here those kind of parents? No one, or we're afraid to admit that, right? And so how much, if we know in our selfishness and our foolishness, if we know how to give good gifts, what's the expectation of God the Father? Oh, wow. He can give some good gifts. But so oftentimes we ask from a perspective that is self-indulging.
We want Taco Bell.
That's a terrible example. I know some of you adults in here going, really? Taco Bell? But man, when he was a teenager, he could pound some burritos, just saying. But listen, I want you guys to understand that if we're not going to ask, matter of fact, I would go as far as to say that most Christians get 100% of what they ask God for, which is nothing. You ask God for nothing and you get nothing and you're surprised. And sometimes we're so fearful to ask because we're fearful we won't get. And so we get into this place of uncertainty because it's like, man, I don't know. Should I? And so we get exactly what we ask for. Nothing. And Jesus is trying to say, listen, there's some things that I have just challenged you with. You're going to need some help. Is something on this list, guaranteed everyone in this room today, there's something on this list that is the gong in your life. That you can't, it's just, it's a struggle. But we're just unwilling to ask. Or maybe it's this. Maybe we're tired of trying to change God to us. Maybe our prayer life and our asking is trying to bend the will of God towards us rather than it changing us towards God. Because so oftentimes, you guys have heard me use this analogy before. We'll switch it up to keep it fresh. But you've heard me talk about the genie in the bottle and how we only approach God when we need something. And it's like, hey, God, I asked, but we've spent no time with God. We've spent no time. So there's one thing that my boys knew growing up from both Lana and I. Over the history of 18 years of life in our home, they got to a place where they understood what their parents expected of them. They understood that. Hunter would know, Kyle would know what not to ask because he knew it's not happening. But they knew that because we spent time in relationship with one another. They knew that because they spent time understanding who their dad. We'll ask God things, but we don't know him because we've not spent time trying to get to know him. Y'all hear that? We don't even know what to ask sometimes because we're not spending time getting to know the Father. One thing, I said that I know about my boys is they knew, before they ever asked, they knew what my answer would be. It's because they knew me. And yet we are so fearful to ask God, and it honestly stems from this place of not knowing who God is. We don't spend time asking. We don't spend time seeking. We don't spend time allowing our lives to be conformed and transformed by the renewing of our mind because we are in constant relationship with God. Jesus is challenging his disciples in this moment. You're going to be dealing with some hardships. You need help. Let me ask you a question this morning. Anybody in here need help? Because one of the biggest travesties, one of the biggest reasons we don't ask because we don't think we need help. Things are kind of going okay. We got it under control. We don't really need God in our lives right now, in this time in my life, because things just have a nice flow to them. Work's going good. Lana likes me. You know, my boys are doing pretty good. My grandkids. I mean, y'all follow me, right? There's times that we get in a flow of life where it's just like, it's good. It's good. I was thinking about that this morning. You know, you've seen these shirts all over. Life is good. How many of y'all own a shirt like that? It says, life is good. I was thinking about that this morning, and I think I want to come up with a shirt. Madeline, maybe you help me. Life is hard. God is good. Because life, anybody in here know life is hard? And sometimes we get into those places and we don't know how to ask because we've not spent time getting to know the Father. And I would adventure a guess that most of us, most Americans in today's society, don't have a great prayer life. Their prayer life is spent more oftentimes in tragic experiences of life. You know, over the last several days, been keeping up with the news, on the flooding in Texas. It's been a travesty. Over 60 people dead. Imagine there's a lot of people on their knees. And so oftentimes in our life, we're asking for removal of problems. It's like, God, I'm dealing with anger. Take this from me. God, I'm dealing with lust. Take this from me. And what Jesus is saying here, he's just like, listen, I'm not just going to wish it away. I'm not just going to wave my magic wand and make it go away. I need you to know me. Because the more you know me, the more these things don't have a place in your life. And see, so sometimes it's not just about the asking. It's got more to do with seeking who God is. Because the more time I spend seeking God, the less time those things have an opportunity to occupy my mind and take root. And so he's calling his people to a place of not just ask for help, but seek me. Spend time in constant relationship with me. Because the more you're in relationship with someone, the more you know who they are. The longer Lana and I are married, the more I know what she doesn't like. The more I know what she does like. The more things that I know about her. The more time I spend with God, the more I understand what his intention and the desire is for his creation. His creation is to come into relationship with him and to not just come and pass by, but to come and stay, to come and rest. Because it's way easier to ask God something if you have already spent time with him, because you know him. And then it might change what we're asking for. Might change what we're seeking. Might change the reasons we knock. Because the more I come in relationship and in tune with who God is, the more I understand what God's intention and desire and will is for Kevin's life. See, I wanted to take a minute to talk about this broader idea of this concept in relationship to the entirety of the Sermon on the Mount. But now I want to take just a minute to break it down even smaller than that. Because not only is it just in the Sermon on the Mount, it's kind of at the tail end of something, judging. We spent 2 weeks talking about judging. Spent 2 weeks talking about what that word means and that it could be translated two different ways, to condemn and to discern. And I think the request of Jesus is, listen, it's not in your right nor your place to condemn someone, because that means I'm writing them off. You know, I sell cars and finance cars, and I was just sitting down a couple weeks, actually Thursday, with a banker we do business with this bank. And I was trying to sit and explain the process. I'm like, hey, this company is aggressive when it writes off an account. What does a write-off account mean? It means they're not paying very well. This company, when it writes it off, that dude's dead. Meaning we have exhausted every effort to try to collect on this account, and it's not happening. And so I write it off. I am condemning that account. I'm saying it has no chance of life. And when it says, don't judge others, it's saying, I'm writing you off. You got no chance to be in relationship with God. You have no chance of being in relationship with me. You have no chance of right relationship. Therefore, I'm condemning you. And then it talks about how we spend time with a brother and a sister, and how this, we've heard this one, the plank in the eye and the speck in the eye, and it causes us this opportunity of humility to self-examine. Why? What are my motives? Why am I trying to help this person? Is it because it'd be more enjoyable to be around if they're better? Or am I genuinely interested in their eternity? And the discernment, the difficulty in discerning that. Anybody need help with that? Ask. Ask so that we might more have a mind that understands God. And then it's pearls to pigs. When do I know that the things that I have value to, when do I know that those are the things that I can offer to someone and they'll be received? When do I know? It's hard to know. He does. How many of those relationships are we taking to the throne of God? How many of those relationships are we saying, God, guide me in this relationship. Let me know, help me to understand when the right time to offer these pearls, to offer these things of value to people who are outside of the kingdom. Help me know. Help me know how to approach a brother when they're out of line. Help me know. But in the mix of all of these things is this idea of humility. And in this section, the humility is still there. Because lack of humility means we don't ask. I told Hunter over and over at our place of business, ask. That seems logical, right? You always ask. Not permission. He's thinking, no, I never ask for permission. For guidance, for counsel. Because the reality is, so oftentimes we're making the wrong decisions, and when we go to God and go, why'd you let this blow up? And he's going, what? What do you mean, what? What I just did, I was trying to do that for you. Well, you didn't invite me to be a part of that. What do you mean I didn't? You hadn't brought this to me in prayer at all, and now you want my opinion? See, that's our approach with God. We're telling God, why did this blow up? Why did these people fall away? Why do these people not receive your good news? Why? And he's going, who are you talking about? Why have you never talked to me about these people before? Maybe if you spent more time in me, you would know when those times are, when the time is right, when they'll receive the good news of me. When they will receive a harshness, possibly, of a lifestyle change that's not in the right direction. See, we're professionals at giving advice at the most inappropriate times. Aren't we? My wife tells me, I used to be funny, but my timing's off a little bit. And so now I'm like throwing these jokes out there and they're not landing anymore. And she's like, it's the timing. You know, well, oftentimes when we give counsel or help to people, what's missing? Is it that it's bad information? No. Timing. Our timing is off. Why is our timing off? Because we're operating on our time scale, not God's. Maybe if we spent more of that time seeking Him, it would make some of those relationships better. Easier. Give you the right thing to say. Nobody enjoys receiving information in the wrong time. I can remember my dad passed away. Oh, I just wanted to wear earplugs for all the well wishes and the things that I received that were intended right, but received entirely wrong. Because I didn't want to hear. Didn't want to hear that was in God's will. I didn't want to hear that things were better because of that. I didn't want to hear any of that mess. So many times we go to talking and we spent no time on our knees. We should be spending more time with God. Taking these relationships, taking our lives, taking the relationships that Matthew has been presenting that in the Sermon on the Mount, these relationships, the right relationship between us and God and us with each other. You know, the righteous idea, this idea of righteousness, it's not just right relationship with God, it's right relationship with each other. And the more we understand that the relationship that we have with God is so affected by the relationship we have this direction, but God's saying, I want your relationships out here to be affected by this relationship. And too often times in our life, we're trying to have this impact over here and forgetting about this one. And God's saying, listen, if this channel is open, if this channel of communication is open, it's going to amaze you what you can do in this channel. But as soon as you take the remote control away and start working this channel and forget about this channel, it's no wonder things go awry. Ask. It'll be given to you. What? Exactly what you need. Seek.
Who?
God.
Pursue Him to the point where if you feel like there's a door closed, you knock. Pursue who God is. If we spend more time, energy, and effort pursuing God, it will change the pursuit of these relationships. And it'll make them happen in God's time. This morning I want to challenge y'all that if we have gotten to this place where we quit asking because we hadn't heard from God in a while, maybe we don't think we need to ask Him. Maybe we think we got it. Let me ask you, where's the humility in that statement? A lot of pride in it, but very little humility. For whatever has hindered your desire to ask, let me first tell you that this presentation isn't just about asking a favor of God and Him granting it. It's not sitting on Santa Claus's lap and telling Him what you want for Christmas. God wants a relationship with each of us, and in that relationship, we're going to understand what His desires are, what His intention is, and our question will change. The questions I got from my sons when they were little were much different than the questions I got from them when they were older. The questions that Brooks and Bodie will ask in the years to come will change over time as they mature and grow and understand who their parents are. But if they don't ever understand who their parents are, the questions will just stop. As we approach God, as we spend time with God, I want to challenge us to understand that this relationship with God is worth having, it's worth seeking, it's worth chasing. Because the more we chase God, the more we understand what God desires for us as his creation. So if there's anything that we can do for you this morning, I'd ask that you come as Mark leads us in an invitation song.